The headlines. Nigerians are heading to the polls to choose a successor to President Muhammadu Buhari. Voters cast ballots in parliamentary elections as well. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has developed a new long-range cruise missile. And the death toll from the massive earthquake that struck Turkey and Syria on February the 6th surpasses 50,000. Everybody, Nigerians are heading to the polls to cast their ballots in presidential and parliamentary elections. A vote is seen as a litmus test for the ruling All Progressives Congress Party of incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari. More than 90 million people are registered to vote in Africa's most populous nation. The presidential race is highly unpredictable as Buhari has faced huge challenges from terror attacks to a sluggish economy during his eight-year tenure. The ruling party has fielded Bola Tinubu to replace Buhari. The opposition People's Democratic Party has chosen former Vice President Atiku Abubakar as its candidate, but a surprise third candidate is Labour Party's Peter Obi. The ballot counting is expected to take several days, but a runoff has been predicted. U.S., European and other governments have urged calm, but Nigerian elections have often been marred by violence due to political and ethnic tensions. Elsewhere, tens of thousands of Yemeni protesters came out in a mass rally to show support for Palestine and to condemn the assassination of Yemen's President Salah al-Samad back in 2017. Yusuf Mauri has the latest.
The streets of the Yemeni capital were poured with a huge number of Yemeni protesters who came out to express support for Yemen's late president, Salah al-Samad. Salah al-Samad was assassinated by the Saudi-led coalition back in 2018. He is hailed here as Yemen's martyred president.
We came out today to express solidarity and loyalty to the martyred president who sacrificed his life on the path of Allah. And we say to the killers of al-Samad, your criminal and reckless atrocities has given new life to a nation. The Yemeni people will accept nothing but the just punishment against the perpetrators.
Protesters also express solidarity with Palestinians who are suffering from Israeli regime attacks and crackdowns. Yemen's main cause is the Palestinian cause, according to government officials who addressed the crowd at the rally.
To the Palestinian people, we say, your blood is our blood, and our blood is your blood. Every drop of blood that is spilled in the land of Palestine is a drop of blood being spilled here in Yemen. Any oppression Palestinians face is considered oppression that is happening to us and every honorable Muslim.
The Palestinian cause will always remain dear and deep in the hearts and souls of the Yemeni people.
The latest protest in Sana'a comes in the midst of ongoing political efforts by the UN Special Envoy to Yemen to reach a deal between the Yemeni government and the Saudi-led coalition to end the conflict. Even if the war comes to an end, the Ansarullah-backed Yemeni government will continue to face many challenges from world powers, given its unequivocal support for Palestine.
Despite 8 years of war and a strangling blockade that has stirred Yemen into becoming the world's worst humanitarian crisis, tens of thousands of Yemenis remain defiant and showing support for the Palestinians who remain occupied by the Israeli regime. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has developed a new cruise missile with a range of over 1,600 kilometers. The commander of the IRGC's Aerospace Force says the missile is dubbed after the city of Pave to honor the martyrs of Kurdistan Province. Brigadier General Amir Ali Hajizadeh made the comment in an interview on the national broadcaster. He said Iran now possesses hypersonic missiles, which no air defense system may ever be able to intercept. The general said all missiles. Iran is now producing a precision strike weapons. The country has made quick advancements in its missile program in recent years. Tehran, however, has repeatedly stressed that its missile program is purely defensive and meant for deterrence. Well, joining us on this segment of the news review, we have political analyst Sayed Mostafa Khoshchesh, who's joining us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Also, we have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich, who's joining us from Belgrade. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Khoshchesh in Tehran. I want to get your thoughts initially on this recent news by the IRGC about a new cruise missile with a range of over 1,600 kilometers. Talk to us about the significance of this new advancement.
Hello, Abby, and thanks for having me. Well, it's no secret that Iran has made much advancement in the area of technology, especially missile industries and drone technology and some other military technologies. Some of the features of the Iranian missiles have never been, developed before. They are unique, including the precision striking capability that you just mentioned. Almost most ballistic missiles and other types that have been developed, especially ballistic missiles, by other countries, they are not so much precise because they are not meant to actually carry conventional warheads. But because Iran is not looking for a WMD or a nuclear warhead, it's been trying to, give this kind of capability to its missiles, especially ballistic missiles, to have a very much, precision capability. Sometimes they strike the targets in a range, within a range of half a meter, that's 50 centimeters, for a ballistic missile that travels for 2,000 kilometers. The same is true about Iran's cruise missiles. Iran has also been developing different types of cruise missiles in order to be equipped with both sides. Now, what matters more is with regard to the hypersonic missile that you just mentioned. Maybe I'll refer to that, in the second part.
All right, let's cross over to John Bosnich in Belgrade. Mr. Bosnich, give us your thoughts on the significance of this recent advancement that has been unveiled by the IRGC and looking at the issue of self-sufficiency as to almost all of Iran's defensive equipment and capabilities are indigenously built. Many believe that the issue of sanctions has also contributed to the issue of self-sufficiency of the Islamic Republic.
Well, obviously, sanctions are in themselves a step towards war. They're a violation of international trade agreements, and they are the way that the United States and Great Britain generally soften up their victims before attacking them. So once sanctions are applied against your country, you can generally assume that there's more coming down the pipeline in terms of bad news. And the military encroachment around Iran with the American fleet and with British soldiers has shown clearly that Iran has to be prepared to protect itself, just like any other country. The relatively short range of the hypersonic weapon that we are talking about today means that it is a regional defense mechanism and not a worldwide strike mechanism. It also indicates, especially with the precision targeting, that it is intended to hit command and control centers, which would be commanding and controlling an aggressive military attack on Iran. So in each case, Iran has the right as a sovereign state to defend itself, and it also has the right to prepare itself for what are very obvious saber-rattling moves from the Anglo-American military complex.
Mr. Khoshchesh in Tehran, if you want to pick up on that as well, add anything, also give us your perspective on the issue of indigenously built capabilities of Iran's defensive artillery and also the issue of sanctions, as we just mentioned, how they could contribute to that notion of self-sufficiency.
Well, Iran has developed its own arms development program since 1982, when it was under harsh attack by Saddam Hussein, supported by 37 nations directly and over 80 other nations indirectly, and Tehran was under the harshest sanctions ever imposed on any nation. And Iran was never allowed even to import barbed wire. Actually, a cargo of barbed wire was seized along the borders of Ukraine and former Soviet Union. Actually, then Ukraine was part of former Soviet Union, but the cargo was stopped and seized at the borders between the then Ukraine, part of the former Soviet Union, and the Russian borders. So it has made the Iranians develop their own technologies in asymmetric warfare. The Iranian doctrine is asymmetrical warfare. So when it comes to the development of military tools and weapons, Iran has placed its missile and drone technology ahead of others. This hypersonic missile that has been developed, this is a technology that has never been developed by more than 3, 4, 5 nations on Earth. The best ones were developed by the Russians. Missiles travel at around 1 Mach, or a little more than the speed of the sound, or twice the speed of the sound. Ultrasonic missiles travel at maximum 4 to 5, Mach, and then above that speed, above 5 Mach, you call them hypersonic. That is to say, the Iranian hypersonic missile, as it was stated last night by General Hajizadeh, travels 12 to 13 max, 12 to 13 times the speed of the sound. And then what matters more is that there is no system in the world to defend itself against such hypersonic missiles, no matter they're Iranian, Chinese, or Russians, or Americans. There has never been any kind of air shield to defend the target. The second point, which makes it more important and even unique in the world, for the first time ever, a ballistic missile has been developed that has the power of maneuverability. This is the unique version that has gone, I would like to say, unnoticed in the remarks of General Hajizadeh. And it's a hypersonic that travels 12 to 13 times the speed of the sound with the power of maneuverability. So you may never ever hunt that kind of weapon that's coming to you and landing on you at such speeds with such maneuverability power. And that's why Hajizadeh says we rest assured that there won't be any match and any kind of defense system to target and intercept such a missile for decades to come. Now, one last word is about the Europeans. The Europeans have been conducting propaganda about designating the IRGC in their terror list. Well, they need to give it a second thought and stop the effort, because Europe has not been an enemy of Iran. Iran is no threat to the Europeans. We have not been in good terms, especially with 3 European states, but we are not enemies. As soon as you designate or you declare to be designating the IRGC, then you are, declaring a new enemy called Iran. And then you call us terrorists, then Iran wouldn't be left with any other option but to consider you as an enemy, as tensions would escalate. Definitely with such missile capability, sure, the new dangers would be posed to Europeans. If you just noticed what Hajizadeh said last night, he said, we feel respect for Europe. We will not increase the range of our missiles. But if they do, if they designate the IRGC and call us an enemy, then Iran would be left with no other option probably but to increase the range of its missiles.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Political analyst Said Mostafa Hoshchesh joining us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Also, journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich speaking to us from Belgrade. And with that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. Welcome back. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the Palestinian people to step up their resistance against Israeli regime and settlers. Hamas reiterated that Israeli crimes will not change the identity of the Arab land as well as Islamic and Christian sanctities. The resistance movement made the call in a statement marking the 29th anniversary of the massacre of Palestinians by an American Israeli extremist group at the Ibrahimi Mosque in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil. In the statement, Hamas said the anniversary of this heinous crime has coincided with yet another massacre in Nablus. There, at least 11 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli raid on Wednesday. Hamas said the Nablus deadly raid once again revealed the fascist nature of the Israeli regime. And a British court has ruled that a London-based company is liable for a deadly blast that hit the Lebanese capital, Beirut, more than 2 years ago. The judgment by the High Court of Justice in London was issued after a lawsuit was filed against the British firm Savaro. There will be a further hearing to determine damages. The lawsuit was filed by lawyers from the Beirut Bar Association, as well as families of some of the victims. They say Savaro is responsible for improper storage of chemicals at a Beirut port warehouse. There, hundreds of tons of ammonium nitrate had been stored, which detonated and caused a huge blast back in August 2020. The incident left over 200 people dead. The latest ruling by the London court is regarded as an important step towards justice, as investigations into the incident have been impeded. The death toll from the landslides and floods that hit Brazil southeast last week has risen to 57. Only one of the deaths has been reported outside the city of São Sebastião. Rescue operations are still underway in the affected areas in the state of São Paulo as dozens remain missing. According to local officials, more than 4,000 people have been forced to leave their homes. Tourists have also been urged to refrain from traveling to the cities in the region as more rainfall is expected. Brazil has been hit by a series of disasters triggered by extreme weather conditions in recent years. Flooding killed hundreds in the country last year. The death toll from the earthquake that hit Turkey and Syria earlier this month now tops 50,000. Turkish authorities have confirmed more than 44,000 fatalities as more bodies are pulled from under the rubble. Syria early raised the number of deaths from the magnitude 7.8 earthquake to nearly 6,000. The February 6th tremor completely destroyed or severely damaged more than 160,000 buildings in Turkey. According to official figures, it has also displaced 1.5 million people. And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be a verse.
وَالَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
کتاب الله.
Once every 100,000 years, gold is created from the collision of neutron stars. Mysterious gold instantly melted into humanity's desire, contained the magic which enabled civilizations to flourish and fueled the desire that made people venture across oceans. But why do we lust after gold? And does humanity own gold, or does gold own humanity? I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For centuries, gold was the economic index which dominated the world before it lost to the dollar. But the 2008 financial meltdown has brought gold back from oblivion. Gold is now dominating the world once again, but why is it gold again? In 2008, gold woke up from its deep, dark sleep. As the dollar became unstable during the U.S. financial crisis, people rushed to gold. And in August of 2011, the twisted destiny recurred. The new gold rush started again. Pursuit has begun once again, and stay with us as we take a look into the history of gold from its glittering past to its sudden return.
Gold.
Kingai.
Kingo.
Gold.
Gold.
With gold.
Gold.
El oro.
The oro.
Oro.
Into gold.
Sold gold.
Gold.
Gold price.
Gold mines.
Gold is undervalued.
Currency, which reflects human instincts, is very much alive. Money gained humanity's passionate desire since its creation. Money was at the center of wars and economies. Its origin can be traced back to Mesopotamia. Thousands of years ago, Sumerians were the first ever to develop trade. Since then, many types of currency have appeared in history. Trading goods for goods appeared first. Grains, essential for everyone, were used as currency in many areas. As time passed, smaller objects were used for trading to facilitate easier transportation and exchange. various metals became the new currency, as they were easily transportable and did not rot. But not all metals were permanently stable. In the end, gold, whose value was accepted consistently as a stable metal, became the best currency. Gold, which is evaluated by its weight and purity, has no exchange rate or nationality. Due to its high value, large trades were made possible with just small amounts of gold. It was the best currency that was accepted everywhere. In 700 BC, the kingdom of Lydia, which ruled Turkey, became the birthplace of the best invention in the history of currency. The capital of the kingdom was Sardis. It was the hub of the East and West, and as trading became important, the need for currency grew. Lydia dominated Asia Minor. It expanded its boundaries as the ancient empire, securing the trade route linking an area of over 2,700 kilometers. Lydia invented the world's first gold coins, using their abundant resources of gold, and built an affluent kingdom.
And this started with King Croesus of Lydia, which is a very famous name, and he really produced the first gold coins and used it particularly to pay soldiers and military people.
In the early 7th century BC, Lydians minted the world's first coins. Gold coins, which feature a lion's head, the symbol of Lydia, became the kingdom's representative export goods. As the world's first gold coins and the world's first empire currency, Lydia's coins spread through Asia Minor and Greece. They became a necessity for trade in the Mediterranean. Goods, art, people, and knowledge gathered in Lydia, and humanity's first retail businesses began. With a single shiny gold coin, people were able to buy horses or delicious food. It also reduced shopping time. A new world had opened up for humanity. But if the Lydians were the first to invent coins, the Greeks were the first to turn coin making into an art form. Each city imprinted its own unique symbols. They were the symbols of national strength. Greek coins circulated the Mediterranean through marine commerce. Gold coins brought revolutionary developments in commerce and became the foundation of civilizations. Education also developed quickly along with the coins. Five 500 years after the birth of gold coins, the currency revolution moved to Rome. Coins featuring the emperor's face, as well as other royalty, were widely used among laymen. As the territory of the Roman Empire expanded, the amount of gold attained through looting and mining grew exponentially. Consequently, the Romans issued more gold coins, and these coins strengthened the empire. Gold coins were what built the Roman Empire. In 395 AD, after the Roman Empire divided into two, Western Rome collapsed within the next 100 years. However, the surviving Eastern Rome continued to write history for another 1,000 years. Constantine the Great moved Rome's capital to Byzantium and founded the Byzantine Empire. Constantine the Great, who reunited Rome, declared freedom from religion and chose Sunday as a day of rest. He also issued a new gold coin called solidus. This is Byzant, the best currency. The Byzant, with a 98% purity, weighed 4.5 grams. The Byzant was the basic currency of the Middle Ages that everyone could trust and use. It was the longest surviving currency in history.
Really ran from about 500... Well, really 300 AD, but 500 AD in Istanbul itself, and lasted for almost 1,000 years, really with the weight and the purity of it unchanged. There were some years when it was a problem, but it did last almost for 1,000 years, the Byzantine solidus. It was a thousand year coin, if you like.
The Byzant was the revenue source to maintain a large army and the means of controlling the empire. That is why the Byzant is called the dollar of the Middle Ages. The dollar of the Middle Ages surpasses today's dollar in terms of stability and value. While today's dollar faced a crisis within 100 years, the Byzant survived for 1,000 years. The Byzant was the partner that supported the kingdom for 1,000 years. The value of gold transcends time and space and gives faith to people. But there was a critical weakness even to gold, the best currency. There is a limit to the production of gold, and there are three ways to overcome the limit. One was to endure the lack of currency, and the other was to bring in gold from other regions through trade and loot. The last method was currency degradation, by making more coins with the same amount of gold. People began to deceive others by making new coins using clipped edges of existing coins.
And up until 1696, coins were struck onto a rough blank. So you used to be able to, if you're a very unscrupulous silversmith, you could clip the edges and get free silver. And so there were many laws that were passed to try and stop this. And in 1696, what they did was that they made sure that all the coins were circular with a milled edge. So that stopped the practice of coin clipping.
This is the origin of how the coin edges look today. Clipping of coin edges brought many problems. The value of currency fell, and prices began to inflate. New coins had to be issued to win people's trust. Sir Isaac Newton stepped up to solve all these problems.
And one of his big responsibilities was to prevent forgery. So one of the ways he did that was by making sure that all the coins had a milled edge around them. Because if the edge is milled with little grooves, it's impossible to clip off a little bit of the coin.
The grooves on the coins that Newton made are used on today's coins as well. The grooves mark the human greed for gold. Gold, however, was never used as the main currency in the East. As the value of gold developed the currency system in the West, brass coins backed by the government played a similar role in the East. Whether it be gold or a brass coin, if the receiver had trust in it, that was enough. People had faith in the government. The first coins in the East were made during the Jin Dynasty. They believed the sky was round and the land was square. So they made a round coin with a square hole in the middle. This shape became the basic shape of Eastern coins for 2,000 years. The trust of currency gave birth to the world's first paper money in China. Gyoza, issued in Buxong in 1023, was the first paper money. When Emperor Kublai Khan of the Yuan Dynasty mass-produced bozhou and circulated them through Eurasia, the era of paper currency began. Paper money was made of paper, but it ceased to be just ordinary paper. Kublai Khan is described as an alchemist in the travels of Marco Polo. Paper currency was like magic to the Westerners who were using gold coins. During the Yuan Dynasty, the government forcefully retained gold, silver, and copper, and with its guarantee, paper money was issued. With the circulation of paper money, less money was spent on producing coins, which led to a better financial status of the government, and thus led to a more active commerce. Replacing the gold with paper money opened up a new golden era in the East. At the end of the 15th century, gold had cast a spell on people and made them cross the oceans, risking their lives. But the lives of Europeans were also shaken up by gold. At the time, the population which had been devastated by the plague was bouncing back. Price of commodities was also increasing. Moreover, as gold and silver from the New World poured into Europe, prices soared uncontrollably. The price revolution of the 16th century began. treasure from the New World created a large gap between the rich and the poor.
And this is at a time when that is much more than a week's earnings in the late. It's more like 2 weeks' earnings. So it is a lot of time to earn the smallest coin. And therefore, people do not have, ordinary people do not have gold coins. It is something for the rich to have.
Prices quadrupled and sextupled. First, landowners who received a consistent amount of rent went bankrupt. Farmers who didn't have money to rent land became wage laborers. On the other hand, the royal families and noblemen enjoyed an unprecedented extravagance. Gold instantly spread throughout European countries, and in its wake, only collapsed industries and financial crisis remained. Such was the curse of gold. The price revolution continued on for over 100 years without any resolution. It was the longest inflation in history. When commerce expanded and capitalism developed, a barter economy emerged. A system of an exchange of promissory notes for foreign currency began. 48 types of gold coins used in Europe in the 16th century were all exchangeable. Thus, financial innovation was propelled by the power of gold. In the early 19th century, gold faced a new era. Money was dependent upon the value of gold. A system of gold and money exchange emerged. Since then, history repeatedly introduced and discarded the gold standard. In 1819, England pegged the value of pounds to gold and circulated paper money that could be exchanged for gold at any time. By 1870, most countries had adopted the gold standard, and the pound, which could be exchanged for gold, became the key currency around the world.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
This is
This
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. My today topic is about the importance of being friendly to others. As usual, I need to add that whatever I say is based on the Quran and Islamic traditions. Being pleasant and friendly to others and being nice and polite when we are with others can attract many achievements to us. A cheerful man, or in better words, someone who is behaving in a way that shows he is happy, can light up the room. He can inspire others to achieve their goals. Such a person can bring a feeling of felicity and happiness, and a feeling of well-being and contentment wherever he goes. Being cheerful involves a positive perspective on life for both the man who is cheerful and others who are with him. By being cheerful, it does not mean that the man is really happy and that he does not have any concern and problems in his life. Rather, to show happiness means that someone behaves in such a way to conceal his problems and do not show it to others. There could be someone who is sad, someone who is in predicament situations, but does not let others realize it and behave in such a way to not let others understand it. And this is the manner of acting that a cheerful man does. Unfortunately, many of us tend to focus on our problems. And in addition, we usually take our blessings and achievements for granted. And this is really problematic. Yes, it is natural to think about the difficulties we face and the challenges we have in our life. But it is natural, if we want to realize them, to think about them in order to overcome them. But if we focus more on the negative side of our life, there is a real danger that it may let us down. It would make us unsatisfied with the blessings we have in our life. But if we pay more attention to the positive parts of the way we are living, it will give us a positive lift, and gradually paying attention to the positive side of our life will become a fixed habit for us. As a result, we will behave in a way that shows we are blessed, we are happy, and totally fortunate. This attitude has a positive effect of human behavior, and gradually, when we are with others, we treat them satisfactorily.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
As I said several times, we have this experience in our life that based on the law of attraction, positive feeling catches positive signals and delivers happiness to others. As a result, being pleasant and friendly also make other people happy and let them feel better. When we make an effort to be more cheerful, we can sense that life is becoming easier. We feel we have more energy, we are more motivated. And being cheerful let our general well-being and outlook improve. By being friendly, we can improve the whole atmosphere as well. Our feeling dominates the atmosphere, just as the miserable person can let the spirit of other people down. Similarly, a cheerful people can brighten them and make everyone feel lighter and happier. For example, a teacher who behaves in a satisfactory way helps his student to be more confident, less stressful. His students are more confident to speak in the class. The student, in a cheerful environment, can learn more, offer better ideas, and offer better thoughts. Imam Ali has got an interesting saying in this regard, and accentuates on the point that how being friendly can attract others' attention. The Imam says in a short but meaningful sentence, "Al-bashashatu hibalatul mawaddah." To be friendly is like a trap that is set by the person to catch love and kindness. Undoubtedly, pleasant and well-mannered people who deal with others with open faces and smiling lips, they will have many friends. And on the contrary, people who face others with a tense, sullen, and angry face, others do not love them, and they detest to be with them. Just imagine a society that its people show pleasance and satisfaction, that how much this society can be a good environment for positive movement and positive activity. Here I need to again repeat that by showing joyfulness and cheerfulness, I don't want to say that we try just to be like an actor or an actress who is playing and performing a role, not at all. The reality of what I am going to point is that we need to train ourselves in such a way that when we are with other people, do not convey our sorrows and depression to them. Do not transfer our problem to them, and do not let them be aware that we have problem in our life. With just a simple smile on face, especially when we see other people, when we are with our friend, we can sense that our friend gains energy, feels better, feels that something good is going to happen in his life. Just this, with a simple smile and an open face. We do not need to use up our energy to show happiness, to show positivity. Not at all. You should not be that much energetic to show that, to pretend to be a good man. No, just a simple smile, just a warming greeting, just not to frown, not to turn sour, not to look bad-tempered. This is sufficient and is enough. It is also narrated from the Prophet to have said, "Ya Bani Abdul Muttalib," or the offspring of Abdul Muttalib. They were the Prophet's relatives from the tribe of Quraysh. "Innakum lan tasa'u an-nas bi'amwalikum." You cannot assist to help people with your wealth and property, because people's need is much higher than your wealth. فَأَلْغُوهُمْ بِطَلَاقَةَ الْوَجْحِ وَحُسْنِ الْبِشْرِ. But instead, meet them with an open face and cheerfulness. Wealth would not be sufficient to meet people's need, but kindness is an imperishable capital and a source of happiness for people. In many cases, we have seen that when we see a friend or a relative and smile at them, they also smile at us and feels pleased. So far we were talking about how important being cheerful and friendly to others is. Unfortunately, the time is ending, and inshallah, if we have time, we will talk about this topic in another situation. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelid.
my share, he knows. Allah knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.